We come to Daniel chapter 5, and we read in verse 1, Belshazzar the king made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords, and drank wine before the 1,000. Belshazzar, while he tasted the wine, commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels which his father Nebuchadnezzar had taken out of the temple which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines might drink therein. So picture this, Belshazzar sitting around throwing this incredible party and decides in the midst of this drunken party, let's go get those vessels from out of the temple that my grandfather or great-grandfather, some relation down the road, took, but at least had enough sense to not be using for our own personal drunken parties. Belshazzar says we're going to do it. Then they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the house of God, which was at Jerusalem, and the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines drank in them. They drank wine, and they praised the gods of gold and of silver, of brass, of iron, of wood, and of stone. In the same hour came forth fingers of a man's hand and wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw a part of the hand that wrote. So he's seeing a portion of a hand. He's seeing a finger write on the plaster of the wall. And then, verse 6, the king's countenance was changed. Now imagine his countenance before in drunken revelry and just sheer stupidity and joy. And all of a sudden, his thoughts troubled him so that the joints of his loins were loosed and his knees smote one against the other. The king cried aloud to bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers. And the king spake and said to the wise men of Babylon, whosoever shall read this writing and show me the interpretation thereof, sounds familiar, doesn't it, shall be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about his neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. Then came in all the king's wise men, but they could not read the writing nor make known to the king the interpretation thereof. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? Then was King Belshazzar greatly troubled, and his countenance was changed in him, and his lords were astonished. Now the queen, by reason of the words of the king and his lords, came into the banquet house. And the queen spake and said, O king, live forever. Let not thy thoughts trouble thee, nor let thy countenance be changed. There is a man in thy kingdom, in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And in the days of thy father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, was found in him, whom the king Nebuchadnezzar thy father, the king, I say, thy father, made master of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers. For as much as an excellent spirit and knowledge and understanding, interpreting of dreams and showing of hard sentences and dissolving of doubts were found in the same Daniel whom the king named Belteshazzar. Now let Daniel be called, and he will show the interpretation. Then was Daniel brought in before the king. And the king spake and said unto Daniel, art thou that Daniel, which art of the children of the captivity of Judah, whom the king my father brought out of Jewry? I've heard of thee, that the spirit of the gods is in thee, that the light and understanding and excellent wisdom is found in thee. And now the wise men, the astrologers, have been brought in before me, that they should read this writing and make known unto me the interpretation thereof, but they could not show the interpretation of the thing. Couldn't do it. And I've heard of thee, that thou canst make interpretations and dissolve doubts. Now if thou canst read the writing and make known to me the interpretation thereof, thou shalt be clothed with scarlet, have a chain of gold about thy neck, and be the third ruler in the kingdom. Then Daniel, after he was silently, I'm sure, standing there listening, answered and said before the king, let thy gifts be to thyself, and give thy rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing unto the king and make known to him the interpretation. O thou king, the Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom and majesty and glory and honor. And for the majesty that he gave him, all people, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him. Whom he would, he slew, and whom he would, he kept alive, and whom he would, he set up, and whom he would, he put down. But when his heart was lifted up, and his mind hardened, noticed, in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glories from him. Interestingly enough, I'm going to mention this in a minute, but in the chronology of the book, that's what we saw in chapter 4. And he was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like the beasts, and his dwelling was with the wild asses. They fed him with grass like oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointeth it over whomsoever he will. And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, has not humbled thine heart. Notice this next phrase. Though thou knewest all this. But, in contrast, hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven. And they have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and thou and thy lords, thy wives, thy concubines have drunk wine in them, and thou hast praised the gods of silver and gold, of brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know. And the God, the capital G God, in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified. You've glorified all these little g fake gods that are just nothing but the works of men's hands and the ideas of men, but the one true God that actually holds your life in his hands, you have not glorified. Well, verse 24, then was the part of the hand sent from him, and this writing was written. Verse 25, and this is the writing that was written. Meni, meni, tekel, upharsin. This is the interpretation of the thing. Meni, God hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Tekel, thou art weighed in the balances and art found wanting. Peres, thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. Then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel with scarlet and put a chain of gold about his neck and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. So you picture Belshazzar getting this interpretation of the Aramaic writing on the wall, and you picture Belshazzar there say, oh, yes, finally, I understand what it means. And it means that somehow someone thinks somewhere that this kingdom's going to fall. Oh, give Daniel everything that I told him he could get. Give him the chain of gold. Give him the robe. Give him the position. Oh, this is great, as we're going to see in a moment, because I am trusting in my fortified walls. Nothing's going to happen to Babylon. In that night, verse 30, was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain. And Darius the Mede took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. What a fascinating text and story that we have before us. A historical account, I should say, in Daniel chapter 5. Well, as we continue through the book of Daniel in chronological order, we still find Daniel serving Babylon under the reign of Belshazzar. We have considered chapters 7 and 8, where Daniel received some prophetic visions from the Lord under this reign. Nebuchadnezzar is long gone. His grandson Belshazzar is ruling the kingdom in his father's absence. Nearly 70 years have passed since chapter 1. So Daniel must be in his 80s when he received these two prophetic, amazing revelations that we considered in chapter 7 and 8. Remember those? I know it was a couple of weeks ago because of our special services last week, but chapter 7 and 8, God revealed to Daniel the future empires that would come onto the scene and dominate the world. And God also showed Daniel, or revealed several individuals who will rise up and who will seek to destroy God's people, Israel. We considered Antiochus Epiphanes and, of course, the future Antichrist. So again, considering the chronology of the book, this is why we're going through this chronologically. At this stage here in Daniel chapter 5, Daniel knows that the days of the kingdom of Babylon are numbered. He knows that. And he's clearly bothered by the future troubles that will befall his people, Israel. So think about this. He's an older man. He's been serving. Nebuchadnezzar's long gone. He's been serving under Belshazzar, who is likely a grandson or great-grandson. Now, the Hebrew uses the word son of, as it always does, to denote in the line of. So we have a grandson, likely, of Nebuchadnezzar, maybe a great-grandson, ruling the kingdom. And during the first and the third years of Belshazzar, God gives Daniel these incredible visions. Prophetic. They were troubling to Daniel, though, because of what he saw concerning his people Israel, but also what he knows concerning the any moment demise of Babylon. So imagine being in your 80s and living and serving this king and this system in Babylon and knowing the days are numbered, but I don't know when. Yet Daniel also knows something else. We considered this all the way from chapter 2 and then chapter 7 and 8. He also knows an eternal and everlasting kingdom will arise. A kingdom that is not of this earth, but a kingdom that is established and inaugurated by God. Go back over to chapter 7. Look at chapter 7, verses 26 and 27, where we read in verse 26, "The judgment shall sit," referring to this Antichrist to come onto the scene yet future that Daniel sees. "They shall take away his dominion to consume and destroy it to the end. And the kingdom and dominion and greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom," that is for all eternity, "and all dominion shall serve and obey him." So Daniel knows the end of the story, but he's also greatly troubled by what is going to happen for what turns out to be centuries and even millennia before that. For years, Daniel had served as a high-profile leader in the great earthly kingdom of Babylon. And since his captivity by Nebuchadnezzar, he was highly regarded as an extremely dependable man of character and integrity. Back here in our text, we see it in verses 11 and 12. When the queen, most likely Belshazzar's mother or stepmother, comes in and says, "There's a man in thy kingdom, and whom is the spirit of the holy gods? In fact, remember in the days of thy father, light and understanding and wisdom like the wisdom of the gods was found in him." Verse 12, "An excellent spirit and knowledge and understanding was found in him." Look at verse 14. He comes to Belshazzar and Belshazzar says, "I've heard of thee that the spirit of the gods is in thee." He was highly regarded. He was a testimony for the one true God. He was an extremely dependable individual of character and integrity. And we've looked at chapters 1, 2, 3, and 4 and seen the character and integrity with which Daniel carried himself amid this incredible cultural situation in which he lived. But Nebuchadnezzar had died. Nebuchadnezzar was no longer on the scene. This occurs here between chapters 4 and chapter 5. And another ruler named Nabonidus had taken his place. Nabonidus and his son Belshazzar, who ruled the kingdom together, seem to have long forgotten this Daniel, or at least cared very little about his life and testimony. And so here we are, decades later, after the death of Nebuchadnezzar, we come to this great scene in Daniel chapter 5. In today's text. Allow me to read between the lines here a bit as I was preparing for Daniel chapter 5 and our study here this morning. When I read of Belshazzar, I think of a trust fund baby. When you consider Belshazzar, I think of a trust fund baby. I think of a spoiled brat who did nothing of his own, but who lived a life of indulgence and a life of royalty, ruling the kingdom while his father was away for years engaging in military campaigns. One of those guys, okay? This is Belshazzar. His father's doing all the work. He's living off the name of royalty. He's sitting in the palace doing what he wants, getting drunk, having his wives and concubines and doing all of this. No concern for, of course, things spiritual, truly spiritual. No concern for anything but maintaining his manner and way of life. Because we know from history his father was out constantly waging war and campaigns against the enemies in Arabia surrounding Babylon. This is what's going on. So we have this co-regency of Nabonidus and Belshazzar, which is why Belshazzar says, you'll be the third highest in the kingdom that is under Nabonidus and myself. You do this for me and I'll give you this promotion. Well, this spoiled brat, at one point, while his father was away at war, decided to throw a party that the world would never forget. A party marked by drunkenness and debauchery and idolatry. In fact, as I mentioned as we read the text, he decided to take the vessels from Israel's temple and use them to worship demonic idols in an attempt to discredit God's people and show his brash disregard for the one true God. Even Nebuchadnezzar didn't do that. I think God has chosen to include this chapter in his word for a reason. We find here in chapter 5, do you realize, historical prophetic fulfillment? We find here the historical fulfillment of a prophecy recorded back in Daniel chapter 2 and verse 39. If you look back at Daniel chapter 2 and verse 39, remember the image that Nebuchadnezzar saw of the great image where he was the head? And we read in verse 39, let's start at verse 38. And wheresoever the children of men dwell, the beasts of the field, the fowls of the heaven hath given to thine hand, thou art this head of gold. But here's verse 39. And after thee shall arise another kingdom inferior to thee. Here we are today. In chapter 5, it's time for the next kingdom to come onto the scene, the prophetic fulfillment of chapter 2 and verse 39, where Daniel is making it clear to Nebuchadnezzar, oh, you're great on this earth. You're this head of gold, but after you, there's going to be another kingdom to come on the scene. Inferior to you, but oh yes, Babylon is temporary. The downfall of the great Babylonian Empire. Now, think about it. As we've gone through Daniel, when detailing the downfall of this great Babylonian empire, God could have focused on all the political or all of the historical details, but he didn't. Because believe me, the politics and history is fascinating of what has gone on and what had been going on during the reign between Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar and Nabonidus and all these things that are happening. But God didn't focus on that. He did not reveal to us the historical and political details. Instead, God chose to record a very personal social event to chronicle the downfall of a great worldwide empire. This is how he chose to do it. He describes the great party that Belshazzar throws on the final night of the existence of the Babylonian Empire. And I ask, and you know, I question, why did God do this? Why did he choose to do it this way? Well, of course, I don't know the mind of God. I believe it's because this great event has very personal lessons for us to learn. And that's what we want to take the time to consider this week and next week as well, I'm afraid. But now that we've read the biblical and the historical record of the downfall of Babylon, let us draw this morning some personal application. The first thing that I want us to take and apply to our lives is this. You can look back at the lessons in Daniel 2 and 3 and 4, and these lessons were appreciated in the moment by Nebuchadnezzar. Remember these lessons? The lessons Nebuchadnezzar learned? The lessons that we learned from reading about Daniel and his character and his integrity and that of Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego. And we learned so many lessons about the sovereignty of God, the power of the one true God, and our need to humbly submit to him. We learned these lessons. They were appreciated in the moment by Nebuchadnezzar at the end of chapter 4. Remember the end of chapter 4, Nebuchadnezzar turned to the one true God, and he was very clear, and I can't not read verse 37 of chapter 4. Here's Nebuchadnezzar's final recorded testimony. "Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King," capital K, "of heaven, all whose works are truth." Nebuchadnezzar came to realize this the hard way, but he did. "All his works are truth, and also all his ways, judgment." And notice this. Look at this lesson. "And those that walk in pride, he is able to abase." What a lesson. This is the point. This is God uses Nebuchadnezzar to teach a lesson to us today as well. So these lessons were appreciated, they were learned, they were embraced in the moment by Nebuchadnezzar. But here's the problem. They were not taken to heart. They were not remembered. They were not lived out in the leadership of Babylon by Nebuchadnezzar's family down the line. You see, leaders change. Politicians, kings, presidents, prime ministers, they come and go. Life is not always consistent. I think the first thing that we really need to grasp this morning as we look at Daniel chapter 5 and we ask ourselves, what is the Lord teaching us through this? What application do we need to walk away from here in chapter 5? The first thing we need to grasp this morning is that it's one thing to know the truth, or it's one thing to learn a great lesson at a point in time, but it's another thing to embrace it, to learn from it, and to actually grow and profit from it. We talked about this a little bit yesterday in men's Bible study. I know Pastor Gary referenced this already earlier, but the reality that God often uses the difficulties, the hardships, the things in life that are tough to teach us lessons over time. And we come back to, what are we going to do with that? Have we learned from it? Have we grown spiritually as a result of what we've been through in the past, or what God has allowed to be in our past? It's one thing to just know the truth, or in Nebuchadnezzar's case, it's one thing to even learn a lesson at a point in time. Yet how we need to embrace it and profit from it. In fact, look in our text again in Daniel chapter 5. Notice in verses 18 all the way down to verse 24, you can just kind of like glance through it for a moment with your eyes. Notice how Daniel had to review history to prove the lessons Belshazzar needed to learn and remember. See in verse 18, "Now, King," verse 18, "the Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom." This is what, let me give you a brief history lesson here, Belshazzar, because you seem to forget very quickly an important lesson that you would do well to heed. Remember your father, your grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar. God's the one who gave him a kingdom and majesty and glory and honor. And God did this, and God allowed him to rule. And yet Nebuchadnezzar, verse 20, he lifted up his heart with pride, and his heart was hardened, and God brought him low. God brought him low, the end of verse 21, till Nebuchadnezzar knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men. We just read Nebuchadnezzar's confession of that at the end of chapter 4. And that he appointeth over it whomsoever he will. And we come to verse 22, and he gives him this history lesson. He says, "Belshazzar, you've not humbled your heart, though you know all of this." You know it. You know this is true, Belshazzar. Daniel had to review history to prove the lessons Belshazzar needed to learn and remember. You see, the problem is, over time, time seems to do many tricks on the memory, doesn't it? We're human beings who tend to forget. I know this is why God has given us this entire word that will stand forever, because he knows we need to remember because we forget. This is why the Apostle Peter says in 1 Peter, "I'm writing, this is going to be written down for all eternity, even though you know this, so you will always have the truth in remembrance." So you will always have the word of God in remembrance. It's one of my favorite texts, and so I have to turn there since I'm already going to not be able to finish it this week anyway, chapter 5. So look at 1 Peter. Notice this, and I know if you come here to Grace Bible Church and you're here on Sunday morning and Sunday night and Sunday school, you could say, I've heard this before. 2 Peter, I'm sorry, because it was the end of Peter's life. 2 Peter chapter 1. I know you've heard it before, but let's hear it again. Look what Peter says here in verse 12. Wherefore, I will not be negligent to put you always in remembrance of these things. What things? The things that the Apostle Peter is writing under inspiration from the Holy Spirit. These incredible things that we need in order not only to be saved, but to grow in the grace and knowledge of Jesus Christ. And to mature and grow in the faith. I will not be negligent, Peter says, to put you always in remembrance of these things, though ye know them. And he says, I want you to be established in the, notice, present truth. The present truth. When you say, well, how can that happen? Peter's eventually going to die. How can I always remember these things? Peter says, yeah, I think at meat, as long as I'm in this tabernacle, in this body, in this human pod, to stir you up by putting you in remembrance, knowing that shortly I must put off this my tabernacle, even as our Lord Jesus Christ has showed me. Peter says, I'm going to die. God has showed me that I'm going to die, in fact, pretty soon. So I am penning the very words of God, even though you know them already, so you will always have the truth, always, and be able to remember it and to be reminded of it. Look at verse 15. Moreover, I will endeavor that ye now may be able, notice, after my decease, Peter says, to have these things always in remembrance. Always in remembrance. And then he goes through here, and I've talked about this before. I've got to stop and get back to Daniel. But the point is here, God knows we have a tendency to have memory problems. Some of us more than others, maybe, as we get older. I know my wife's really struggling with that because I remember all the times that I've talked to you about this before. I've said this before and she always tends to forget. And I said, no, I did say it. I remember. But she forgets. So we're working through this together because I know I said it. I'm pretty sure I did. But we all tend to grow and we tend to, I'm joking, of course, I'm the one that is forgetful, but seriously, we tend to forget and God knows we do. Time seems to do many tricks on the memory. Have you ever talked to somebody who, over time, they tell stories of the past, and the stories just get more and more embellished every time that they tell the same story? Whatever happened, the fish they caught gets bigger and bigger over time, or the silly thing they did gets more and more outlandish over time as they tell the story and it changes. Well, we have Belshazzar here knowing the lessons that Nebuchadnezzar learned. God tells us that he knew. Because Daniel says, verse 22 is key here. Get this. Belshazzar, you have not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all this. But hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven. Notice that specifically what led to the demise of Babylon and Belshazzar in particular, due to this forgetfulness, or what I call willful ignorance. Willful ignorance. Here we are, verse 22 and 23 again. You not humble your heart, though you know this, but has lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house before thee, and thou and thy lords, thy wives, thy concubines have drunk wine in them. Thou hast praised the gods of silver, of gold, of brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear not, nor know. And the God in whose hand thy breath is, I love this, God is the one that has in his very hand your life, this one true God, look at that, whose ways are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified. What led to the demise of Babylon and Belshazzar due to this willful ignorance? What led to the demise? Three things I want to propose this morning. Number one, arrogance of leadership. Arrogance of leadership. Now keep in mind, all of this is built on the platform of willful ignorance. Willful ignorance. You know, Belshazzar, what Nebuchadnezzar learned and what happened. And you spoiled brat, trust fund baby, sitting here in the palace getting drunk and throwing big parties while your dad has his life on the line out there waging war. Defy the one true God. Arrogance of leadership, brash defiance of the one true God. Now, consider this. Even Nebuchadnezzar respected the Jewish vessels that were used in the temple. I mean, Nebuchadnezzar thought highly of himself. We know that from the text. We've seen that in chapters 2 and 3 and 4. He thought highly of himself, but at least he had a measure of restraint and respect for the one true God. And of course, at the end of his life, I think he came to know that one true God. I've said this before. My opinion is we'll see Nebuchadnezzar in heaven one day. And I think it's going to be fascinating to say, man, Nebuchadnezzar, how did that feel to go through that lesson you had to learn? Belshazzar, on the other hand, was so arrogant that he feared nothing and nobody. Feared nothing and bring those in his stupor, bring those vessels to show these Jewish people that are, we have them captured anyway, they're in our care, and just bring them and let's get drunk in these things and praise our false gods using these vessels from the temple. I mean, the lessons are so clear, this arrogance of leadership. Pride is the ultimate sin and ultimate downfall of man. Pride. Lifting oneself up. And yet God is sovereign over all, no matter what men or women may think of themselves. It doesn't matter what you think. Here's the most, you can go back to Nebuchadnezzar, or we can talk about Belshazzar right here. The most powerful individuals in the world at the time. If anybody had, you know, credence to brag and think they could lift themselves up with pride, believe me, Nebuchadnezzar would be the one. And he's the one that God brought down low as an example. Arrogance of leadership. Pride, the ultimate sin and downfall of man. And notice, though, turn back to chapter 2, verses 20 and 21. These are the lessons we have to understand. In Daniel chapter 2 and verse 20, Daniel answered and said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever." Here's why. Wisdom and might are his. They're his. And he's the one. He changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. You mean God is totally sovereign? He is the one who is all powerful and in control? You mean it wasn't some secret society of people that put our president in office or the prime minister of England? Or it wasn't some kind of control of man, and man's doing everything and in control of everything, and God's up there wondering, okay, what's my plan B? What can I do next? Look at what they've done. Daniel's making it clear here to Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, we're just specks. We are specks in the realm of the greatness and sovereignty and omniscience and omnipotence of the one true God. He's the one that removeth kings and setteth up kings. Chapter 4 and verse 25, we consider the lesson that Nebuchadnezzar learned. When Daniel says, "They shall drive thee from men, Nebuchadnezzar, thy dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, they shall wet thee with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over thee until you learned a lesson, Nebuchadnezzar, until you've learned a lesson that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomsoever he will." And then remember what happened, Nebuchadnezzar, just as God said it happened. He's just going around looking at what he's, look at this great kingdom I've built. Look at all these wonderful things that I've done. And God's making it clear to Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, it's going to come down on you quick till you learn the lesson. The most powerful human individual in the world was humbled and learned a lesson of who is really in control. Who are we to think that we're above this? Arrogance of leadership led to the demise of Babylon and Belshazzar in particular. Number two, love of materialism and hedonism led to the demise of Babylon and Belshazzar in particular. Again, Nebuchadnezzar is the one, humanly speaking, who made Babylon what it was. Well, you know, the great hanging gardens of Babylon and the military conquests and how much land that the Babylonian Empire consumed. I mean, yet it was toward the end of his life he realized these things can be taken from me in an instant. Nebuchadnezzar came to realize that back in chapter 4, verse 30. The king spake, remember, and said, is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the king by the might, here it is, of my power, and for the honor of my majesty? For any human being to think that we have power and majesty, no matter how powerful we are, is ludicrous. Notice, this is what I was referring to earlier, while the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from thee. They shall drive thee from men, dwelling shall be with beasts of the field, make thee to eat grass, all of these things, till you learn the lesson. Verse 33, the same hour was the thing fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar. And he was driven from men, eat grass as oxen, body was wet with the dew of heaven, till his hairs were grown like eagle's feathers, his nails like bird's claws. He realized at the end of his life, no matter how great I think I am, anything and everything can be taken from me in an instant. So here we come back to Belshazzar in chapter 5. I want to talk about the love of materialism and hedonism. We find Belshazzar reveling in materialism we find Nebuchadnezzar reveling in materialism and hedonism. And while he's actually in the process of doing it, God says, here's what's going to happen to you till you learn your lesson. Then we come to chapter 5 with Belshazzar, years later, many years later, a couple of decades later, Belshazzar, while the city was being besieged, Belshazzar is spending his time partying rather than soberly attending to the protection of the kingdom. We'll talk more about that in just a second in closing here, but the city is under attack. The city had been under attack long before he threw this party. But the city is being besieged, and he says, I need more. I need more women. I need more wine. I need more attention. I just want to take everybody's mind off of the besieging of Babylon and our city that is happening right now. Let's throw this incredible party. We're getting wasted. Bring the vessels from the Jewish temple that we took from Jerusalem that my grandfather Nebuchadnezzar took. And here he's just reveling in this debauchery while the city is under siege. What led to the demise of Babylon and Belshazzar in particular? Arrogance of leadership and love of materialism and hedonism. You know, today we live in a society, Pastor Gary brought this up this morning in Sunday school, we live in a society consumed with things like materialism and hedonism, even among professing Christians. At the very same time that God calls us to service and vigilance, at the very same time God says, do the work that I've called you to do faithfully right now as you're waiting for me and watching for my return. Oh, but there's so much here to love on this earth. If I just had more of this or less of this or more of this, love of materialism and hedonism. Number three, the third thing that led to the demise of Babylon and Belshazzar in particular, arrogance of leadership, love of materialism and hedonism, and number three, trust in the work of man's hands. Trust in men. Trust in people. We know that Belshazzar was trusting fully in the walls of Babylon for protection. How do we know this? Well, first of all, we see in our text right here that he's just throwing a great party. What the Bible doesn't go into great detail to explain is for weeks or maybe even months before, and while this party's going on, the Medes and Persians are finding a way in. Belshazzar was fully trusting in the walls of Babylon for protection. Historians tell us, history tells us, the city had been under siege for some time. But a false sense of security permeated the minds of the Babylonians. Here it is again. It's this pride. It's this trust in men and who we are and what we can do and what we have accomplished, rather than an acknowledgement that God is the one in total control and we need to submit ourselves to him, and he will lift up and put down whom he will. So here we have Belshazzar throwing this party. Babylon was surrounded with walls. Are you ready for this? Okay, get this. This is incredible to think about. 350 feet high. 350. Okay. How many of you have hiked up to Vernal Falls? At Vernal Falls in Yosemite, okay, Oris will know this statistic to a T. Vernal Falls is how high from the ground up? Anybody know? 317 on the dot. Okay. 317 feet high. That's Vernal. These walls were 350 feet high. So you're standing at Vernal Fall looking up, just add another 30 whatever feet. On top of that is how high these Babylonian walls were. Not only that, are you ready for how thick these walls were? Historians, archaeologists have told us. 87 feet thick. 87 feet thick. I mean, we're talking almost a football field length thickness, the walls, while being 350 feet high. Well, what happened was the Babylon, the Euphrates, passed through the city to give an ample water supply. They built it on the Euphrates, and to give an ample water supply for the city. So all this time, the Babylonians, and Belshazzar in particular, are trusting in the walls, throwing a party, materialism, hedonism, arrogance, while the Medes and the Persians were diverting the water and then able to enter under the walls through the riverbed. Today, a false sense of security has lulled the church into a lack of discernment and watchfulness. I mean, see the lessons we can learn? This is history, and God chose this account to teach us lessons and for us to grasp the truth that he would have us to learn. The three: arrogance of leadership, love of materialism and hedonism, and trust in the work of men and man's hands were the demise of Babylon, were the demise of Belshazzar, and are crippling even the church today. This false sense of security. We trust in people. We trust in money. We trust in finances. Or we trust in everything but God and his word. I'm not just talking corporately in our church. I'm saying in our lives as believers. In our lives. We trust in all of these things other than God and his word. We've forgotten that God's word tells us to trust him alone in all things and to be alert and to be discerning in life. We can learn so much from this. Our time is up, and we've only considered really one lesson here. But it's very possible for us to know the truth or to learn lessons in life only to forget the truth or fail to remember the lessons we've learned. And that very thing can be dangerous for us spiritually as well, collectively as a church, but individually as believers. Don't let the lessons of the past be forgotten. Don't be willfully ignorant. There are consequences to willful ignorance. There's so much more we could consider. Our time's up this morning. We'll keep going here, Lord willing, next week in Daniel chapter 5 and look at this, but I really want us to think about this today, the reality of put yourself in Daniel's place. Here's Daniel, and here's where he is in his life, and here's what's happening all around him, and we find this arrogant, spoiled king learning a lesson that he should have learned from his grandfather or great-grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar, didn't learn. There are consequences to that willful ignorance. Let's be careful in our own lives, in our own ministries, to make much of the truth, to not forget the truth, to learn the truth, and to learn from the lessons of the past. Heavenly Father, thank you for the time you've given us to consider this today. And as we work our way through this, Lord, help us to continue to work through in our mind the lessons that we can learn, even throughout the week here from Daniel chapter 5, as we consider the great downfall of the Babylonian Empire, just as you said would happen. May we not make the same mistakes in our own lives individually today. May we be alert, vigilant, watching for you, but in the meantime, Lord, faithful to you in all things. We ask this in Jesus' precious name. Amen.